Good evening, listeners, brave navigators of the enigmatic and the concealed. Have you ever felt the pull of the unanswered, the allure of the mysteries that shroud our existence? For more than a decade, a unique comic publisher has dared to dive into these mysteries, unafraid of the secrets they might uncover. This audacious entity is Paranoid American. Welcome to the mystifying universe of the Paranoid American podcast.
Launched in the year 2012, Paranoid American has been on a mission to decipher the encrypted secrets of our world. From the unnerving enigma of MKUltra mind control to the clandestine assemblies of secret societies. From the awe-inspiring frontiers of forbidden technology to the arcane patterns of occult symbols in our very own pop culture. They have committed to unveiling the concealed realities that lie just beneath the surface. Join us as we navigate these intricate landscapes, decoding the hidden scripts of our society and challenging the accepted perceptions of reality.
Folks, I've got a big problem on my hands. There's a company called Paranoid American making all these funny memes and comics. Now, I'm a fair guy. I believe in free speech, as long as it doesn't cross the line. And if these AI-generated memes dare to make fun of me, they're crossing the line.
This is your expedition into the realm of the extraordinary, the secret, the shrouded. Come with us as we sift through the world's grand mysteries, question the standardized narratives, and brave the cryptic labyrinth of the concealed truth. So strap yourselves in, broaden your horizons, and steel yourselves for a voyage into the enigmatic heart of the Paranoid American podcast, where each story, every image, every revelation brings us one step closer to the elusive truth.
Another episode of Paranoid American Podcast. We got a repeat offender today, co-conspirator Cameron Harmon. If you haven't seen the initial episode that I had him on, we talked about dark personalities and we got into serial killers and cults and all the things that the kids love these days. And today we're going to get, I guess, a little bit more in depth onto some specific cults, like good old American cults, I think. I think all of them are good old American cults. So before we even get into all that, because we were already talking shop backstage, Cameron, please tell everyone where they can find you, or if you got any projects going on, any books, wink, wink, that you want to push, do it all right now.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Thanks for having me on again. I appreciate it. Yeah. The last time we talked, my book was still in the works, but it's out now. My book, What's Under the Mask, The Psychology of Dark Personalities, is out. You can get it on Amazon, and I'm sure there will be a link for it in the notes. But yeah, anywhere you, if you like paperback or ebook, both are available. And if you want more audio and more in-depth analysis than what's in the book, you can follow my podcast at What's Under the Mask. And you can find that anywhere you listen to podcasts.
All right, let's pop you up here because we're going to get into business, talk shop. So I guess I'll just tentatively call this top five cults, top five American cults. These aren't necessarily going to be arranged in my preference. It's very subjective and it jumps around based on discussions and new research that comes out. It's like, okay, now this one's on top. I think what makes the most sense is the one that's the most recent and that has had the most popularity. So that would probably be Nexium. Nexium's had two or three different TV shows / documentaries. One of them was HBO called Seduced. This one was 2020. And then there was a TV series called The Vow, which ran for 2 years, 2020 to 2022. And both of those kind of are my full insight into it. So you've probably got way more than whatever I was just consuming from HBO and Netflix, right? Hopefully.
Yeah. So I write about Nexium and specifically Keith Raniere in my book on my chapter on cults. And he's a fascinating character. But as we dive into this conversation, what you'll notice is a lot of these individuals have a lot of similarities. Dark personalities usually do. The thing they want the most is power, and it's just a difference of how they get that power.
So in this one, Keith Raniere, I guess he starts to set the course, and one of the rules that I've made up in my own mind, this isn't based on any good research, just like noticing patterns that are interesting to me, but most really good cults have some kind of sex element related. Yeah. And I'm going to say in that vague way so that Marshall Applewhite can fit in, because he won't fit in the same way that I kind of crafted it with, like, Keith Raniere or any of these other cults usually have this like this daddy figure, and they get the pickings of the entire cult, and it almost turns into a cultish aspect. And almost, I wouldn't say a requirement, but a key indicator is that all of a sudden you've got like the rooster that has his pick of the hens that feels like a very cultish flag, right?
100%. It should be no surprise because, again, you know, like I said previously, it's about power. And Keith Raniere is no different. His brand really was based around, and a lot of, I think we even talked about this in the last time I was on. Cults have this weird connection to religion, but it's more of New Age spirituality. In almost every cult, there is a flavor of New Age spirituality. Where that comes from, I'm not 100% sure, but Keith Raniere even got a chance to go speak to the Dalai Lama, but almost lost that opportunity due to some of these weird allegations that he had before everything came falling down. He was actually in communication with the Dalai Lama. And it was because of this new agey spiritual stuff he had going on. Because like Scientology, and this is similar with all cults, is that they have this aspect of self-improvement and mindfulness. So they take all of these aspects of spirituality and kind of try to rebrand it and make it profitable because they sell classes like, oh, let's get rid of your anxiety by spending $800 on this class. That's just me talking to you for a couple of hours. And I'm going to have you sit and meditate and you'll be all better now.
I mean, I know we're talking Nexium, but there's another acronym sort of self-help cult that I'd say NLP almost fits that exact same description that you just described, at least the whole like practitioner certificate route. I don't know how much you know about this or if you've looked into this before.
I'm not super deep, but I'm actually really familiar. I was involved with some like spiritual-esque type people. After getting out of the army, I kind of just fell into this, like I was meditating a lot and it helped me. And then I was surrounded by people who were like this, who were in this kind of like new age spiritual stuff. But I just could never really get behind it. You know, the minute that they would talk about chakras and crystals and stuff, like you completely lost me. And then at some point, it always kind of goes down a rabbit hole into paganism, where they're, you know, talking about black magic. And again, like I said, you're losing me. Meditation is a good thing. And I really do enjoy it myself, but it does seem that like it's almost like a gateway thing, like it's a foot in the door method to get you into stuff that's deeper. And that's these groups feed off of that, and they look for individuals who are susceptible to that kind of thing. Like if you're already kind of in that way of life, like you're meditating, or you know, you're just even just a little woo-woo, those are the people, that's who they're looking for.
So basically the audience watching right now, so be careful. Yeah. Out there, you might be like prime real estate for any up and coming cults. And I guess speaking of, I mean, Nexium sounds like it would have been a cool one to be a part of, at least on paper. I know, but let's just say that you can get over the branding and the blackmail thing, right? Those two things, and maybe the starving yourself thing, you can get over those three things. And I'm sure there's a few more. The rest of it sounded pretty cool, right? It was almost like a miniature version of Scientology, where
yes,
it promised some next level thinking, maybe positions in shows and movies, and just networking beyond anything else to some people, right? So right. I mean, I don't know. Like, isn't this a good one? Would you join Nexium without those? We just got rid of the three things that I mentioned.
No, because like, see, but that's how they get people, right? Because it's people who want to do better in life. Like, you know, the simple thing, like we were both in the military, right? The right. Military made our lives better to some degree because we were exercising, because we had to do things that required us to be disciplined and use our brain for problem solving skills, right? But you don't have to be involved in groups like that to do those things, right? Like once you kind of figure out that you can do those things on your own, you become immune to the cult mentality. But for people who maybe want, it's like a gang, right? I mean, like, why do people, lots of people say, like, I would never be in a gang. But if you're in an environment where that's really your only option, and these people are offering you family, they're offering you an opportunity to make a living and to and make friends, and it becomes clear. And it's again, and this, I was explaining this to somebody else recently. You don't get, like with Scientology, for example, you don't get all the Xenu alien god and volcanoes until you're already tens of thousands of dollars in debt.
And you gotta pay for that. That's crime. I mean, that's the climax of it all. You don't want to get that whole thing the first day you sign up. I don't know.
Right, right. Well, and people would, obviously, people would not be interested. They'd be like, no way. Right, right. Watch any of those documentaries on Scientology, and that's what they tell you, you know? And they're so elaborate. That's one thing I think is fascinating about Scientology. It's so elaborate. You know, like once you get to these upper tiers, you know, you're paying all this money, and then they take you to a secret room, and they've got a metal briefcase, and like, this is the secret knowledge that's been passed down for generations, and now we're giving it to you. And then you read it, and it's like alien gods and fucking dropping bombs into volcanoes. Like, then at that point, you're already in. Like, there's no way to get out of it, you know?
They all kind of have those versions, right? I mean, I would almost say, yes. And maybe this is right or wrong thinking, but it's almost like Christianity was supposed to be the anti-cult, ironically, or at least like the modern version of it, in that there aren't supposed to be any secret meetings or anything that's outside of the Bible. There might be different interpretations and different sects, although there's Opus Dei, which is literally a secret society within Christ. But anyways, the point that I want to get into with that qualifier is that it's almost like you don't lead with Xenu the same way that Catholics don't lead with the Trinity. They're not like, all right, let's just get into it. God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit, they're the same, but they're not the same. Like, you would just confuse people right out the gate, and they would be like, okay, this is probably not my thing. This is almost like doing algebra. You know what I mean? I didn't show up to do algebra. So I think that there's also like a point of working towards it, but there's got to be people that show up and say, what the hell? So in Nexium, what is that moment, do you think? What's the briefcase moment?
See, that's where Nexium actually did better than other cults, you know, relatively speaking. And, you know, it's crazy because Keith Raniere claims that he has a 200 plus IQ. We don't even really have the ability to test for IQ that high. Like, that's literally like the 1% of the 1%. If somebody's IQ is that high, you're not even going to be able to test it appropriately. So like saying, and I'll tell you this, when I was working in the jail, I met an individual, and he was extremely intelligent, and I interviewed him. He's one of the people in my book that I interviewed, and I asked him straight up. I was like, have you ever taken an IQ test? And he said, oh yeah, sure. He's like, I got a 146, I think is what he said. Again, a 146 is still like Albert Einstein level IQ. Okay. That's still really, like, even up at that level, that's still hard to test for. But there's a reason he said it. I don't think he really took an IQ test. I think he said it because he's a narcissist and he wanted to impress me, and he wants people to be impressed by the things he says, you know, like, I think Keith Raniere is the same way. He's a narcissist. He's a sly talking. Now, I will say he is smart. No doubt he is smart, but that's not the point. The point of saying I have a 200 IQ is to impress people beyond recognition. Like, oh man, this guy really is all the things he says he is. But when you look at these cult leaders, they all have the same kind of thing. They are all that way.
Oh, well, Keith Raniere is also a sponsor of the show. I just wanted to point that out. So if you wanted to go a little bit lighter on him, then it seems like you've been focusing a little bit unjustly on someone that has such a high IQ. And I guess slight tangent, but this is something I always like to bring up when you make these points about proving how smart you are through the IQ test. My understanding is that even the original IQ test and all subsequent IQ tests for the next generation or two, it was really about identifying kids that were so dumb that they needed to sterilize them and their parents to just be like, you don't belong in society. So this is like the nice way of weeding you out of society, aside from taking you out on the side of the barn, which I guess would have happened maybe a century earlier. So that was my understanding of IQ tests. They were never really intended to show smart people. It was to identify someone that had such extreme learning abilities that some kind of action needed to be done. I guess now it turns into like special ed learning. That's how you kind of identify. But it's a little bit ironic that people prove how smart they are by comparing themselves on a test made for, you know, education challenged people.
Yeah, no, and you're not wrong. I actually, I'm in a class right now. We're talking about this. The person, one of the people involved in creating some of these very early intelligence tests, they were created by people who were involved in eugenics. And if you and your audience are familiar, which I'm sure you are, with eugenics, you can kind of smell where that comes from. No good intention there, certainly.
Well, and without jumping ahead, but one of the I would almost argue all the cults that we can bring up have a certain version of eugenics built into them. Mm-hmm. So yeah. NXIVM would be no different. That it's a little bit more subtle in NXIVM, but in NXIVM, it kind of feels like Keith Raniere just bangs all the smart, hot actresses and makes more Keith Raniere's. And maybe there's a dangling promise that, and you too can have your own harem of, you know, I think that's the subtext without being cheesy and advertising that part.
No, 100%. You're not wrong. You have to wonder, even, you know, this is not necessarily cult related, but fuck, even Jeffrey Epstein, some of his stuff was really bizarre. Like, why did he have these, like, you know, borderline medical facilities in some of his houses, like I believe it was the ranch in Texas. There was Zorro some ranch, really, yeah, there's some really odd stuff in that house or ranch or whatever. He had a really weird interest in like making more little Epsteins in a weird way. Like, I believe some of the indictments were even that he was paying women or forcing women to like, carry his children or something like that. I forget it. That goes down the rabbit hole pretty deep, but something weird there. But yes, you're not wrong. I mean, think about Charles Manson and the Manson family. That's, you know, almost one of the classic examples of, you know, this strong, like, intelligent, charismatic male figure having women around him that he kind of possesses and owns. And in Charles Manson's case, the, you know, he used these women as pawns to get things, like even with the Beach Boys guy, he sent his, you know, some of his female members, right, to go basically seduce that guy. And then he let them stay at his house for a while until they got kicked out. So it makes sense, you know. I mean, again, even though they're, you know, have a dark personality, psychopathic individuals, still very intelligent. They knew what they were doing.
Well, I guess that's a really good bridge here, because Manson, when Manson comes up, I think he's such a microcosm of this cult mentality. I truly wonder how big could Manson, like the person Charles Manson, how big have he had scaled that cult? Because I don't know if I see him as someone being able to manage people the same way Keith Raniere or Jim Jones or some of the other people that we're going to talk about. It almost seems that he would lose control a little bit because he himself lost control a lot. Anyways, that leading to a popular theory that I hear come up a lot is that Manson was kind of controlled. He was like an MK Ultra attack dog by fill in the blank. And that's why, you know, he had all this access and why he got all this popularity was because he kind of ran to his, he wasn't running by the beat of his own drum. Maybe he was convinced that he was, but he was sort of weaponized and allowed to. So is there anything like that that comes up with Keith Raniere? Is there any speculation on someone that's like the puppet master behind Keith Raniere himself? Or is Keith Raniere sort of like his own entity?
I don't know. For certain, but I could see, I mean, just, and I guess I keep going back to Jeffrey Epstein, right? Like,
in his case, really, Mossad, right? That's the idea, is that his puppet master was Mossad.
Right. Or something like, and it could, I mean, maybe it was multiple entities that were controlling him, but there, I mean, or how about even more recently, P. Diddy, right? Why does that look so familiar? Why is there so many weird happenings going on with these individuals where they're high level celebrity esque types with lots of money and influence? Like, why do they need to do these things? And why does it always involve blackmail? And we know in Epstein's case, so many people have come out and testified or made public statements saying, like, yeah, my whole purpose, or I was there to service or be with a public figure or these people. Well, I actually wrote about Epstein in my book, and there was something I read that I hadn't actually heard when the Epstein thing was going on. It was just kind of bizarre. It was like a one-off thing, but I read that there was a news story that had come out about a woman, a journalist. She said she went to Epstein's house in New York and he gave her the tour and all that good stuff. And then he took her into a room, a secret room, where all the cameras were monitored from, basically like a, you know, like a central command where all the TVs were. But she said that there were people in there monitoring the cameras, that it wasn't him doing it. It was, there were people in there watching the videos. And I thought that was kind of strange because I don't remember ever hearing any of that during the trials or any of this other stuff. It always was centered around Epstein, but like, who are the people in those rooms watching the cameras?
I mean, it makes me immediately think of Operation Midnight Climax, where a guy, George Hunter White, was literally recording, but watching behind these mirrors and getting military and politicians and anyone that had secrets to see how much they would divulge if he just gave a bunch of drugs and hookers and just recorded it for a while. Why is there someone behind that in these cases? I don't know. Fun. Maybe that's like the... Like if you get a bonus at work and you get to go and be the camera guy at Epstein's for a month or so, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a wild gig. And then you see it all implode and you're just watching the news like, oh, whoa, that's wild.
And this is, I think, maybe the best point out of all the cults we'll talk about, because I've got a question that's really general, but are like men more susceptible or are women more susceptible in the case of NXIVM? Ranieri specifically focused mostly on women, right? He got a whole bunch of women to join his cult. Or was it more balanced? Like what as a guy am I gonna join NXIVM for aside from the generic reasons, like, you know, networking?
Great question. It actually was balanced, to my understanding. NXIVM was balanced between men and women. The reason why the women are the emphasis in this story is because of the subgroup that they formed. And that was kind of one of the things NXIVM was known for, is that they had like these different little groups within the big group.
The original group, just like a lunchroom, right?
Yeah. Like, so the original group starts out. And I think that, again, the reason why this attracted so many people is that it was about self-improvement, very stoic, very almost like Spartan-like. You know, there's a documentary, and I forget which one it was that I watched, but there's clips of him getting the men together and he shoots them a text. It reminds me of the military. He shoots them a text at 3 a.m. It's like, all right, meet me here at this time and place. We're going for a run. Right. And the thought process here is that, like, okay, we're testing your discipline. Are you disciplined enough to get up? Right. But it's like, also, why do you need to do that? Like, in the military, it makes sense. You know, we're training you to be a soldier. We're training you to
battle ready. Yeah. You'd be ready to go at any given moment.
Yeah, but like, why do these civilians, you know, like, if your thought process is just to build discipline, I could think of easier, less stressful ways to do that. But what it really makes me think is that this is just the indoctrination. This was the soft push towards getting you disciplined, because it's just like the military, you know, not to bag on it, but the military is breaking you down so that you do what you're told. I think that this is the same thing. What seems maybe innocent and it's like, oh yeah, we're trying to build you up and make you tougher and you know, we're going to help with your discipline, really was like, I'm building you. And again, maybe this speaks to Ranieri's intelligence, but I'm breaking all of you down because I'm going to train you to be the way that I want you to be, which is to be disciplined and to do exactly what I tell you without asking questions. And the men in this case, in their program, were just as susceptible because their wives and their girlfriends were the ones that he was sleeping with. And some of them knew that and others didn't. But to me, it just smells like grooming, right? In every sense of the word, it was grooming. He got the one female, Katie Mack, something or other. And
Allison Mack, yeah.
Allison Mack.
The Smallville girl, or one of the small, because he also had Kirsten Kruick, who was also a Smallville girl, but she got Alice Mack to join and then she bounced and then Mack stayed and then became the queen. Is that the right way to consider that, with Keith Ranieri the king and she became the queen at some point?
Yes, because, and now this is probably a good time to talk about this, that subgroup I was talking about with the women, it's some Latin term and I forget what it was, but I think it meant something to be with submissiveness. Like, and what their original thought process, what they were telling these women in this group was to teach them how to become better wives by being submissive to their husbands. Very archaic and old way of thinking, but they phrased it in a way that seemed right. And again, like, this whole program is about discipline and whatever. So it's like, it was programmed around, like, we're making you a better wife. We're helping you become more respectful towards your husband. But then in the same breath, the brand that these women would get, a brand right above their vagina. And the brand was Allison Max and Keith Raniere's initials. That's what the brand was. It was their initials molded into this weird symbol. That's what they got branded on them. And that is no other, that's there only for one reason. That is to show that you are their property. And there's no discipline about that. That is just, you're my property.
And the guys didn't get brands. This was just for the women?
As far as I know. I mean, if they did, I don't think anybody's come out publicly and said that.
Just the way that you're describing it too, because I have a really weird Twitter algorithm, but I know that there's a very modern subgenre of people that follow this tradwife feel. And tradwife, but this is more of a conservative, sometimes like Catholic leaning. I'm not really sure exactly where to pinpoint it, but I'm thinking that Keith Raniere doesn't seem like someone that would project himself as being a conservative right-wing Catholic.
No.
It almost seems like he would position himself as the opposite. But ultimately, if all roads lead to being a trad wife, is that kind of how this is?
I think for them, in their case, yes, that's what they were doing. Because it's like, okay, we're jokingly saying trad wife, but what are we really saying in this sense? You know, I'm not saying that everybody that is in this subgroup of trad wife is this way, but when it's used in this group mentality, whether it's Keith Raniere, Charles Manson, it's used again for power. Everything about dark personalities, the psychology of dark personalities, it is always coming back to power, right? Serial killers want power over their victims. Rapists want power over their victims, but in a different way. And psychopaths that are in the workplace, they want power too, but again, they attain it differently. But at the end of the day, the bottom line is power.
All right, so let's wrap up NXIVM a little bit. And I guess instead of doing a paranormal conspiracy probe and the whole, I should have made like a little, maybe I will. Maybe in the future I'll make like an animatic for this. But I want to just rate on 1 to 10 how, and you have to join a cult. Just say that like you've got to join a cult.
Okay, about to join any of them.
1 to 10, and don't think ahead or anything. Just like gut instinct, where you at on joining NXIVM. Like Keith Raniere himself is like, hey man, you heard about this thing called NXIVM, I want you in and we're going to put you up kind of high. Like, how likely are you to join this if you have to join a cult?
Shit, I don't know. I mean, honestly, the way that they brand it at first, right? It's believable. It's viable, right? It's about improvement. Like, if you're not selling the chicks getting branded above their vagina at the front door, then you've probably got a good chance of bringing people in. I mean, yeah. I mean, anybody that wants to self-improve, part of that Stoic philosophy, I could see. Yeah. I could see out of the others, I could see this one being more believable.
So, I mean, I'll give it a rating for, I'm going to give this one a 7, and it's only a 7 down from maybe an 8 or a 9, because I know that Keith might be messaging me at 3 a.m. to go for like a run. And that's like taking out a solid 1 to 2 points easily for me.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, it's very, yeah. I'd probably rate it an 8 out of all the cults. I'd probably rate it an 8 because it's the most believable. And most of the people in it didn't really understand what was happening until it kind of all exploded.
When you say most believable, that's another good point. Was there any supernatural promise whatsoever? Because even in some of the other cults that lean on, Jesus or Christianity and like their own little flavors, that still incorporates supernatural by default. But Keith Raniere, was it all self-help, or was there one level of like, and you can levitate and you can see through walls? Or was that never part of it?
No, you know what it really reminds me of? Are you familiar with Friedrich Nietzsche?
I mean,
the philosopher.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we can start just talking about nihilism right now.
No, I was just going to say the idea of what Keith Raniere is trying to do reminds me of the Übermensch, which basically loosely translates to the Overman or the Superman. That's the idea. It's the Superman. And Nietzsche believed that humans had this innate ability to become Superman, and that's what we should strive for, is to become that. What Keith Raniere was trying to do in the way that he talks, because there's videos, you can go on YouTube and go watch some of their lectures, they're still around. It reminds me of that. So not supernatural powers, but just like, again, it's the same new age spirituality of like unlocking your, you know, subconscious spiritual potential, you know, like, so it's not as wild as Scientology, but there is still a spiritual element to it.
Is there anything to it? Like if you were to just remove the whole cult, like you're not going to join a cult or anything, you're just going to listen to his audiobook or whatever. Do you think that there's merit? Like you'll gain confidence or you'll gain some kind of ability? Just like if you went go through the military, it's not all roses. It's not all positive development, right?
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, probably. Yeah, I bet you. His stuff reads just like any self-help book on Amazon. I'd put money on it, you know, like any, like Ryan, think about Ryan Holiday. He's an author. He writes books on stoicism. I have one over here to my right. And I stopped reading his books because it's just the same regurgitated crap over and over again. Like, you know, stoicism is great. Like,
sponsor, by the way, I don't know why you keep doing this. You're like laser focusing the people that are making this show happen. Go ahead.
I mean, good for him. I mean, but regardless, philosophies are good, but they're just philosophies. You read about them and whatever. And if it means something to you, then that's great. It does. And it helps you. But that's what cults take advantage of, because they can find this and they look for people who are prone to it and suck them in.
This is actually a good time to cut to a commercial on all of our comics that tell you exactly how to think and what to believe and who to trust. So we'll go. But let's move on to People's Temple, which I think.
Ooh, okay.
And I think we kind of like smashed it out of the gate with Nexium. I can't imagine, I guess I'll read ahead a little bit. I can't imagine wanting to join any of the other cults as much as Nexium. So let's go with People's Temple. I guess right off the bat, I like the rating system. So how likely are you, before we talk about it, to join People's Temple? And I guess let's say it's not 2024, a two, even if it's in the time.
Mm. Well, okay, in the time, that's probably more relevant because it was...
And you're so, lower class. You're going to be lower class as well. Like you're going to fit the demographic, I guess.
Then I could see it being more believable, especially if you don't know him. Like if you didn't know Jim Jones prior to any of this, he's another charismatic, you know, figure. He honestly reminds me a lot of Hitler because of the way he talked and the way that he inspired people. Just very... boisterous, just you know, like he could talk. He was very good at talking and convincing people. So probably more like a five, because again, it had such a heavy Christian influence.
All right, I think I'll give it maybe a four, just because I didn't like going to church ever as a kid. So that part would have turned me off. And then I guess there's another interesting aspect of People's Temple. You tell me how true this is, because it's based on maybe documentaries more so than good old book learning, but that he had somewhat of either a democratic or a dictatorial way of pairing people up. He was like, you two get together, or I'm going to get with your wife, or a group setting, right? Like he would basically like demasculate guys in front of their wives by saying like, she no longer belongs to you. Like she's going to belong to me. In front of everybody.
Yes.
At Humana, our Medicare Advantage plans give you coverage and care you can count on, along with guided support to help you feel your best. You could have a plan with a $0 premium or an all-in-one plan that may include medical and prescription coverage, as well as routine dental, vision, and hearing. Learn more at gethumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
Yes, he definitely did that.
Did Rhaenyra ever do something like that where he's like, you actually belong to me now? Or,
well, probably in that subgroup that we talked about, with that smaller group, especially with Allison Mack, because, you know, Allison Mack was like completely subservient to him. So yeah, probably within that group, he was saying, making claims like that, like, you're going to sleep with me because I actually own you. And your husband is just a part of this whole thing. You know, again, and I'm sure it always ties back to spirituality somehow, right? Like, we're not all, you know, none of us are people. We're all God, really. So it's not really cheating because we're all the same thing, right? Like, that's probably somehow how they branded it.
That's another good point, too, because Jim Jones starts as a kid. He starts out as being like a preacher. He just kind of like his hobby, I guess, instead of fishing or collecting bugs under rocks, was that he was just preached to other kids and he loved it and he thrived off of it. And I'm going to ask you to speculate here. So this isn't like, we're not going to record this and air it or anything for anyone else to hear. But do you think he actually believed in any of the Jesus stuff? Do you think like Jim Jones was actually a Christian, or do you think that he just saw that as his conduit in order to gain influence and power?
I think probably a little bit of both, because I thought the same thing, because I wrote about him in my book, and that definitely, when I was reading about it, it definitely stuck out to me. And I was like, how like deep did he really actually believe this? Because, and if you pay attention, his belief changes, right? Like he's still Christian, right? But he goes from, you know, I believe it's like Methodist to Protestant to kind of like a new age spiritualism type thing, even though it's all Christian heavy. Yeah, man, his belief kind of changes over the years. And here's the thing, you talked about when he would preach to other kids. If other kids didn't like it and left, he would preach to stuffed animals. He would preach to just about anything. Like,
but he needed also, to do it.
Yes. Yeah, it was a compulsion almost. And now, where did that come from? I don't fully know. Like, he clearly picked it up when he was a kid by going to church. And one of the things I read was that he was enamored by the fact that people loved their priest. You know, this guy gets up and talks and everybody has to confess to him and everybody has to console their things. And for somebody that's a psychopath or a, you know, has a dark personality, there's nothing more in the world than they want than that kind of power, that kind, because it's, and this is where narcissism comes into. It is the power, but for a narcissist, it's not always about power. It's about attention. It's about unearned power, unearned attention. And for him, there's nothing more than you can get than being a pastor who's got all this, you know, power. Like, you have all these people who are just willing to prostrate themselves at your feet and believe that you are really like the mouthpiece for God. Could you think of any position more higher than that?
I almost imagine this one as the anti-Nexium. It's like the most polar opposite to Nexium, because Jim Jones, kind of like Keith Raniere, targeted high-performing, famous, rich, you know, Jim Jones, he kind of was the most, like, his biggest demographic was lower class and lower educated and just people going through a hard time. And he kind of promised, right, not just the regular old Christian salvation, but that, hey, if we all come together and we act as an actual community and help each other out, then life can get better. So he was almost running a mini like socialism on a certain level. And it seemed that people directly and like tangibly benefited from this immediately. Like, you saw the difference overnight, where you're like, oh, my normal church, they're just like nice to you when you show up, and then you go, you know, you see them on the street and they're like, you know, hey. So this was different from that.
You brought up a really great segue here. You talked about socialism. Jim Jones, was a hardcore communist socialist. He was all in on communism and socialism. He was at one point even a registered communist in the United States. He would go to these worker parties. Yeah, he was all in. And his favorite people to read about, his number one dictator was Mao. And he loved Mao, right? And so it's, again, what it says, like when you research about it, what it says is that he really was fascinated by how he had power over people and he could command and be in charge, right? What does that translate to for normal people? Okay. Mao was one of the worst dictators in human history, and millions of people died as a result of communism in the 20th century. So even when he was a kid, he would actually march around, do the goose step, the Gestapo walk when he was a kid, and he would get kids to do it with him. He would order kids around to try to reenact being Hitler, and what, these other kids were like little Nazis.
This is like early 50s or something.
Yes, has to be, because this was when he was a kid. This is before he actually like grows up.
Okay, so yeah, there's no question. He wasn't doing like a Roman morning salute, and then it was like, oh man, Hitler took it. Now that's going to look bad in the future. This was definitely a post-World War II goose-stepping in America sort of practice. Was he anti-American? Because it almost seems like a prerequisite. If you're a staunch communist, you kind of got to be anti-American.
Yeah, I believe probably to some degree. So one of the biggest things that he was like, one of his big platforms was racism. And he was always, you know, and to his credit, like some of the things, like he was always, you know, he talked to Martin Luther King, like he would go to rallies, like he was for it. So like he wasn't all bad, I guess. Like, I mean, he's a bad dude. But one thing you got to question and wonder, and I talked about this in my book, I talk about, oh man, what's that guy's name? We'll come back to it. I forget it. But there was another guy down in South America, the cocaine king. He did all kinds of nice things and bought a lot of stuff, like built soccer fields for kids and
Escobar.
That's right. Pablo Escobar. He did all these kinds of nice things too and spent a bunch of money trying to. But again, is he doing it because he's a genuinely good person? Or is this another way for him to look good among other people? With dark personalities, you always have to wonder that. You cannot take anything at face value. Like, I would be more inclined to say that Jim Jones's whole thing with racism was less to do with him actually being a good person and caring about equal rights, and more to do with the fact that it was a hot topic at the time, and he was able to use his influence at the time to persuade people to come to his group.
Well, let's not just start cutting the poor guy down. Like, he's not here to defend himself. So just to be the the default Jim Jones apologist in the room, I guess. Let's assume good intentions, even if everything else kind of went to hell. And another thing, too, is when you brought up Charles Manson and this idea that, well, someone else was pulling those strings. The same people that were maybe pulling Manson's strings have been rumored to have been pulling Jim Jones's strings. And one of those examples, like, it's all, I'll open this up as a question to you to speculate again, but how was he even allowed to go and form his own country? How was the US? Because it seems that once you start doing something outside of the US, now the CIA is like officially gets to be involved without having to do anything covert or act like it's a conspiracy. So it almost seems like he would 100% have been on the radar of the CIA for sure. That's probably easily provable in some aspect, but how much of that was being like allowed to happen? Like, was this a controlled demolition in some way?
I don't know. I mean, you do have to wonder. I mean, it was a different time too, right? Like, I don't think you could do it today, but again, that's not too different than what
Ocho, right? But if it was 10 years earlier and he was like, I'm a communist, it just would have been like straight to jail. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It would have been like, you're not doing anything else. But you know, if you waited your time another 10, 15 years, now it's like, okay, we can't say straight to jail because freaking COINTELPRO and MK Ultra came out and the family jewels. And
I don't know. I mean, my thought process is like, he would have been a good patsy like Manson, but to what end? You know, that's, I guess, where I would, because it's also at the same time, you got to think the CIA probably has bigger problems than some dude, like, you know, pretending to bring people back to life and heal them, you know. But to, you know, to bring it to another group is Osho. Are you familiar with Osho and his group?
Yeah, I have to refresh me because the name sounds familiar, but
it's I think they were called the Rashinishis or Rashinishis, something like
that. Right. Yeah, they had wild country or something.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And so what they did, so he was a guru in India and he bought land in Oregon and created this, like, you know, again, socialist utopia in Oregon. And it fell apart because they opened it up and all of the homeless people around America were like, dude, this is the place. Like, everybody's banging and there's drugs. Like, I'm coming. Like, I'm coming.
And they got guns. They just give you like AK-47 when you show up. They're like, here you go.
Yeah,
I got to say, higher than People's Temple. I know this one wasn't on our list, but I don't know, a 5. I'll give this one a solid 5.
The Rishnis or Temple?
The Rishnis, I would give them Temple. I give a 4. I think the Rishnis, I'd give a solid 5, assuming I was already in their demographic.
Yeah. Okay. If you're in their demographic, well, shit. At the time, yeah. If you're in their demographic, that's probably a solid 7. Like, that's something the other groups didn't have. Is like, he offered them a place to go. They had food. You know, sex, drugs. Like, you're out in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, that's.
Are they still accepting people? Is there any remnant at all of that community? Because I still see people sharing his videos all the time on social media. Like, look at this guy. He's dropping some serious gems right now. It's like, oh,
yeah.
They haven't heard.
Yeah, no, the group I don't believe exists anymore because they, you know, they basically, one of the members basically tried to poison the town in Oregon that's next to them that was trying to
one
get them
time, evicted. They did that. They tried doing that one time.
Oh, just one time. Yeah, no, it's fine. It was just the one time. It was one person. Yeah. And then, like, just the random firefights they'd get into with the people in the town, you know, it's fine.
You're honestly, I'm at a 6 now.
Okay. Yeah.
I just added another point. Yeah.
No, but he is still popular. I've actually read a couple of his books out of curiosity. But again, it's the same kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, all of these spiritual, cultish, new age stuff, it's all got the same fling and flavor. And if you read them, if you get it, I've read hundreds of books like this from people like him. It's the same shit. It's, they're trying to rebrand and resell that they know the secrets of the universe. They're all knowing. And if you read their book and meditate the exact way that they meditate, you'll transcend reality and whatever.
Right. Well, I guess that's a good point. And maybe another metric that we can measure up to. I won't have to make this all formal, but I'm just thinking, like, Keith Raniere, you made a really good comparison where he's almost like a military version of New Age, where it's more believable. It's a little bit more practical. He's got like an actual roster of people. And then if you get to Osho, he also made, like, you might actually find merit in stuff he says, which is why people share it on social media, because he's got some kind of merit to it. So if you're like, it's a little too woo-woo for me, Raniere might be more your flavor because he can remove some of the woo-woo and add some other crap to it. Jim Jones, though, so I guess now that we're talking about this, I'm thinking, right, I've only ever heard his death tapes, which are really dark and maybe not the best example of his skill and rhetoric, right? Like, maybe that's not his rhetorical best, because I think he was already drugged out of his mind. And then they put out an album. The People's Temple has like a vinyl album. I haven't, I don't have my own copy, but I've got a digital. It's not very good. Neither of those things would have sold me. I can't imagine coming across a transcript of a Jim Jones sermon that would sell me either. Maybe just because his flavor wasn't mine. But on this scale, right, I'm almost like, I would probably listen to Raniere and then Osho and then Jim Jones out of those three, and probably wouldn't even really listen to the Jim Jones.
Yeah, hell no. Jim Jones is, it was, like I said, very Christian, and it has, honestly, has the same kind of smell as Charles Manson stuff, the Helter Skelter shit. It's apocalyptic in nature, you know, it's this, that, and that's why they moved out to their own little Guyana. country. Yeah, Guyana. That's why they did that, because they were preparing, you know, what was that other group? What was that other group in Texas where they got into that massive shootout with the ATF and buildings like were exploding?
Oh yeah. I don't know the name of them off the top of my head. I know exactly what you're talking about.
It was in Waco, Texas. So I think that's enough for people.
Are you talking about the David Koresh?
I think that was
okay, not recently too, right? Then we're talking 80 and no. That was 90s, right?
Yeah. Like in the 90s.
They got into this shootout. The Branch Davidians.
Oh, right. Yes. Right? Yes. Very similar, right? So like it doesn't start that way. Jim Jones didn't start that way. It started pretty traditional Christian, you know, for the time. But where things start taking a turn is that he starts doing these like healings, right? Like, and you've seen videos of this kind of stuff where people are like on the ground shaking and he's like, rise. And the person gets up from the ground and they're, you know, magically better or whatever. The thing was, is that he would pay people to do that, right? As probably most of these people are, right? They're paying people to perform. So he pays people to sit in the audience and he knows who they are. So he calls them up and you're healed now. And bam, now they're healed, right? You see that enough times, you might believe it, right? Especially if you're already very religiously minded, you know, not to pick on anybody, but if you're already in that mindset and if you're maybe doing a lot of drugs, like you're like, yes, I'm in it. Let's do this, right? And again, foot in the door method. That's the psychological term for all of this stuff, right? You're not bringing Xenu and the volcanoes and the bombs right at day one. That comes down to the ladder after you're already, you know, thousands of dollars in debt and your family hates you and you're isolated right now. It's like, all right, here's the briefcase with the alien shit. Same thing with Jim Jones, right? Like now that I've moved you all to Guyana and we're in our own little communist world, now I'm partnering all of you up. I'm going to bang your wife. You're going to do what I tell you to. And by the way, we're all going to die. Like, end of the world.
Well, I guess at least in the Miracle Preacher way, and great movie if you haven't seen it, for anyone watching, A Leap of Faith with Steve Martin, basically reenacts this fictionalized version of Timothy Popov that had like the miracle water and all this stuff. Like I grew up to those infomercials waking me up in the middle of the night constantly. And I would almost say that to their credit, they kind of put Xenu first, right? You might just be some bumpkin. And I guess this is where a lot of those, that sort of preaching came popular, was that America, I'm just going to throw a number out without being accurate, but I'll say like, I don't know, 1850s or like late 1800s. But you almost had a lot of Christians that didn't necessarily fit easily into certain denomination. And these traveling pastors would come around and you'd go and you would see them like just healing people. And they kind of became that, like, I don't know if you can categorize that, but it got people of these different sort of beliefs that were vaguely similar now under this one literal tent. And now they're like all together and they're seeing this, and you don't have to wait for years to see like, oh, this dude's like taking cancer out of grandma's and he's making people walk again. It's just like day one. That might actually be the selling point. I could almost imagine if you show up to Scientology and they're like, bro, we got aliens, we got volcanoes full of dead spirits, they're gonna like latch onto you, we're gonna clean them off of you. That's what, or if you go to Rainier and he's like, we're gonna brand you, you know what I mean? Like, what if that was the pitch?
Shit, I don't know. Maybe that might work for some people. Again, like
it almost seems drugs. Like you'd be a little bit more karmic debt free if you just led with, hey, we're gonna brand you, just let you know.
Yeah,
that comes later, but it almost seems that you wouldn't be able to come out with a big, I guess TV show would still be made, but you'd be like, oh, I couldn't believe it once I got deep into it. Then they were like, we're going to brand you. Because if on the little like form that you got to fill out that says, I want to join your cult, and you have to be like, I hereby have read that you're going to brand me and you're going to make me wake up at 3 a.m. and all this.
Maybe they were just bought in. I mean, I think that's why the documentaries, at least for Nexium, are good, because they really, there's the one I watched, it was from one of the members who was really deep in it, and he was bought and sold on this thing the whole time. And then it was his documentary because he felt so guilty about what happened to the people in the group that he was trying to be one of the people to expose it. And I think that watching it from that perspective, because he's honest, you know, he says like, yeah, man, I was in, you know, I really liked what we were doing. I was friends with Keith Raniere, right? Like, I think that's good to see that kind of stuff. Cause there's not much of that exists today about like the Jim Jones temple,
well,
or, you know, the Manson family.
For specific reason on the Jim Jones.
Yeah. Yeah. For very specific reasons.
Well, I guess great segue to our next cult, which yes. We'll also rate ahead of time, Heaven's Gate.
Hell yes.
Man, I'll give this one a six and a half.
I'll give it an 8.
Okay. But really, so the main reason that I don't see this one as high for me is as Nexium was just because there's not really any guaranteed promise of sex. It's almost the opposite. Although maybe this is their Xenu. I guess jumping ahead a little bit, but Heaven's Gate, the guy that ran it, Marshall Applewhite, and I'm going to state some of this like so simply, then you'll have to go back and correct me just while you're here.
It's good.
He starts this cult maybe before it becomes Heaven's Gate. I don't know if it went through some name changes, but it was him and a chick that he was with. And then she dies and he castrates himself. And then after he castrates himself, he can't run a sex cult now, right? He kind of screwed himself out of that path. I guarantee you, he woke up one night and was like, what have I done? Like, I've got all the other elements here, but I'm missing this one. But he castrates himself, and then he requires everyone else to castrate themselves too. How much of that is accurate? Do I have any of that kind of misstated?
Yeah, no, that sounds about right. I do think that it went through some, I don't know if it was so much of a rebranding as it was just him and this woman. So the way that it kind of comes down is he was going to school, he was going to college, and he was kind of like doing the thing where he was like learning about different religions. He was also like religious, but not religious. Again, this one out of all of them is the most new age spiritual type. And I say that because of how they got into it. And he started kind of like getting really interested in like past lives, out of body experiences, all of that kind of stuff, which makes me believe, because I don't know that I've ever read this. And I don't know if this was part of the group or not, but you got to imagine for the time and the stuff they're talking about, heavy drug use. That's the only way I could really fully understand why, because the progression from how he goes from being kind of like quasi-religious to a new age spiritual to there's a fucking comet coming and the aliens are taking us up, baby. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how that progression happens without there being a heavy use of drugs.
Were drugs used by Heaven's Gate members that you know of?
See, that's the thing. No, I don't know that. I'm only speculating because of the nature of what they believed and what was happening. But nothing that I read, no literature that I read, suggested that it was part of like the necessary part of their group.
Because Manson, for sure, drug use, right? Right. People's Temple was just Jim Jones doing the drugs.
Yeah. And I imagine that there was drug use in the group, but not like cult mandated, right? But interestingly enough, and you probably know this, but Manson was involved in LSD studies. That was what happened prior to all of the Manson family stuff. He was actually like participating in research involving LSD.
This was in jail, I believe. He went to a certain jail for, I got the details murky, but it was like assault or attempted murder or something. He went to jail for something pretty serious, and while he was there corresponds to the exact location of the jail and the time period in which MK Ultra was doing what they would consider indiscriminate LSD studies. So just put it on the coincidence counter and just wait until, you know, it like rings a bell or something.
Yeah, for real. Yeah. Anyways, back to Heaven's Gate. Yeah. It seems right for the time and for the topics that they're kind of going into. Like, it just seems really hard for me to believe that they're not also doing copious amounts of drugs because of the nature of some of the things that I believe. And, you know, so like I said, so those two, they get together, and the woman is the one that suggests that they have known each other in past lives and that they were destined to be together. and that it was this, you know, like some kind of like ancient prophecy that they would come together and that this was going to happen. That's where it starts.
All right. If we add drugs, I'll give Heaven's Gate a 7. We'll okay. see how we do.
Okay.
So why does he cut his dick off?
I have no idea. I quite honestly, I don't know. And I would be surprised if anybody really truly knows what's going on there. Like, unless there's a member who survived and
his member didn't survive.
His member, rest in peace, 07's in the chat. but I don't know why he specifically did that. But again, like, some of what they did defies logic, right? I mean, like, their end, you know, their final event makes no sense. So I'm not surprised he would do something as drastic as cutting his unit off.
Oh man, you know what's crazy though? There's another person that did this, the exact same castration thing. But it was a rapper, man. It was like a West Coast Wu-Tang guy. They're trying to start like a West Coast version of Wu-Tang. It wasn't the Black, this is a total tangent, I know, but it wasn't the Black Knight. I want to say it was like North Star or something, but he takes LSD, and I think his name was like Christ something or other. He takes LSD, talks to some entity / spirit / Jesus alien, like some amalgamous thing, right? And it tells him, like, cut off your dick. Like, in order to reach the next level, you got to cut off your dick. I wonder what the hell that is. Maybe it's just like so we've all got weird brains, and maybe they just had two of the same model of weird brain that when you hit that switch, that thought comes up. But it's weird that that is just a thing. And he does this after his partner dies, right? Marshall Applewhite.
Right.
So the speculation, I can't remember where this came from, maybe even my own head, was that it was almost like, well, if I can't, you know, have a partner, no one can have a partner. And that it was even that now it's a distraction. Like, my soulmate, I know, like, if I'm waiting for her to come back, or she's going to be a baby and I got to wait for this freaking baby to grow up, right? He's already an old dude. So it's like, I don't have any need for this part of myself anymore. It's just a distraction. I just need to work on the website, you know, 24/7 and run this cult. Yeah. So chop that guy off. And now all of a sudden you've got laser focus. I don't think that's how it worked out, but maybe that was some of the logic. If you have to push logic into where maybe it doesn't belong, right?
Well, you know, and you got to wonder too, is this like, did this actually happen, or did he say, you know what I mean? Like, that one makes me skeptical, because that kind of injury, like, if you didn't go get medical help, I mean, you would bleed out within minutes. The amount of blood you would lose from just chopping your own genitals off, it would be massive. Like, you would die within minutes, if not. So I'm skeptical. Would I be surprised if he actually did that? No, not at all. But I'm skeptical if he actually really did do that.
So that said, there was other people that joined Heaven's Gate that are encouraged to castrate themselves as well, kind of in following his footsteps, right? And in some of those instances, they don't go to the hospital and say, hey, here's what I want to do. They just kind of take it into their own hands, literally. And some of them, it doesn't work out very well because they don't know what arteries are and how to cauterize things. And did anyone die overdoing this? Or
I don't know that for a fact. My guess is that if they did, they probably did a good job of covering it up. They probably did not want that advertised, that they had members chop off their members and die like that, because that's not a good selling point if you're trying to recruit.
Yeah, we're going to go down to a 1.
Instantly.
If on the poster. And a weird tangent, but I think just to try and figure out some of the reasoning behind this particular aspect of castrating yourself, because this was male only, right? Like, the women didn't do anything. They didn't have to, like, cut their any parts of their body off, right? This was just for the men.
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, yes. Because again, it's so, you know, like, there's only so much information. And for the same reason that we don't 100% know what happened with temples, you know, the temple group is kind of the same thing that happens in this group.
Well, so yeah, the temple group, to speculate and go back just for a second on that, is that he there's a couple of lines of thought, but the death tapes seem to imply at least part of this is that some people knew that it was poison and that they were going to be leaving this life in order to go to a different one. That was the belief. But then there were also some people that were maybe on the fence, and that's who that death tape was. He was like, all right, get your children, have them drill. Like, he was trying to convince people. And then there's like a third group of like, hell no, I'm not doing any of this. Like, you're not talking me into this. And then they were either forced to drink in some instances, or in other instances, maybe just taken out, you know, externally without them being a willful participant of any of that. So that's that part. Heaven's Gate, it seems like it's been pitched as all voluntary, like no one was held down and forced to eat the applesauce. They all did it by themselves, right?
They ate the applesauce, and then in, I think probably in all the cases, they had bags over their head, plastic bags with Ziplocs, not Ziploc, but like a zip cuff to make them suffocate after they ate the applesauce.
Plan B, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean, like, you want to talk about, like, you know, committing to the role like they did. So, you know, when we're thinking about, like, why would somebody join a group like this? Why would somebody be involved in this kind of stuff? Their ratio for getting people to fully commit to it is pretty wild. You know, when you're thinking about, like, People's Temple, the Manson family, and any of these other groups, like, they knew they were eating the poison. They were eating the sap sauce that had the poison, and then putting a bag over their head to make sure that there was no getting out of it. That's crazy.
And I guess too, the whole rating scale and the cultish, I definitely would have been the most in their demographic, because they looked at computer programmers and like website and techie people. And if you like Star Trek and all that, it seemed like that was the pool that they were, or like the lake that they were fishing out of a little bit.
Yeah.
So that part, although as soon as I showed up, and I probably, they're also the only one that I can think of that comes with a uniform. None of the other cults necessarily have, like, and here's, you know, here's our outfits or whatever. So I don't know. Even with adding all those up and they get drugs included, it's a 7. But the second they're like, and you got to castrate yourself with this broken CD-ROM, then it goes all the way back down to like a 1, if 1's the bottom.
No way.
So the last one, I won't expect you to rate it, just because we were talking earlier and you haven't heard of this one as much. And the only reason that I have heard or even care about this one, and the reason we're ending with it, is because it's from like the 1860s, 1865 or something. But it's the Oneida community. And the reason is, the first time it came up, I was like, why do I know that name? And it's not just because I grew up in upstate New York, which is not far from where this happened, but I grew up in a place called Oneana, which kind of sounds like Oneida, but I believe that the areas are both named after these Native American tribes in upstate New York. So they've got that going for it. But this is, as I was looking into this a little bit earlier, let me see if I got my note here. And this was something that I didn't necessarily know before I was looking into this to talk about today. But the Oneida community starts in 1865. It's
okay.
Matches a cult by any sort of definition of the word, especially between the two of us. But the guy that starts it is John Humphrey Noyes, or Noyes, which is an awesome last name. It's literally N-O-Y-E-S. His last name is Noyes. Which just feels like you're already in a trance now, right? I've already made you believe in some weird thing. But he's been credited as being the first person to introduce what would be considered a positive eugenics movement in the United States. And this is maybe even predating the term eugenics by 2 full decades. That said, the eugenics as a concept, I think, kind of came out of like Darwinian thought, and it came from a few other Galton. I can't remember all the different people's names, but it's not like this guy invented the entire concept of selective breeding. But to actually say, let's put this into action, let's find people that are human beings in the society and have them breed with the explicit intent of creating a better class of people. He's kind of credited like an unsung hero in the eugenics community of being the first one that does this in 1865 or so. But it's got a very specific flavor of Christianity to it, although it's got Man, I love this time period because it also has like a weird Mormon influence, but it's not Mormonism. It's Christianity, but they believe that Jesus had already come back and everything. And now we were in paradise, or we were like in post revelation. So that now you're kind of living on paradise on earth, and there is nothing better than that. And that he was trying to use you, and I'm simplifying a little bit, but he was trying to use this positive version of eugenics to kind of prove that, like, look, we've got all the tools. He died, he came back to life, he came back to earth, he absolved everyone of sins, like, we're good. Like, now we just have to make this paradise back into what it needs to be. And he starts this entire Christian sort of community around this. It eventually turns into, because of that eugenics aspect, where he originally was like, okay, you two pair up, kind of like that Jim Jones way. But over time, the way that I've understood this is that it became almost a democratic process where the whole town would show up to church and they would kind of collectively decide. And I don't know how they did it, the mechanism, like maybe they just pull someone up like a cattle call auction and they're just like, all right, here we got, you know, Jessica Lang here, who do we think would be the best match for her? You know, it's like voting prom king and queen, but they got a bang immediately after. And then, and also in the Oneida community, this was an interesting aspect, is that they believed in the whole like village raising the child aspect, to the point where they would allow a mother to breastfeed the child, but only because they needed the child. They learned over time and through experience that the child needed to bond to someone, but they came to identify as a caretaker. Like, you need to let this child bond to what it perceives as a caretaker. And that the relationship between the mom to the child, that's different. Now, like, that's the mom bonding to the kid, which has no social value whatsoever. In anything, it might actually be like detrimental to the society for someone to think like, oh, that's my kid, or I have some sort of ownership or influence over that kid. It was really just an upward, like the kid needs to bond to someone so that when they get old enough, they can be raised by the rest of the community. Because if you didn't breastfeed them, they wouldn't develop that, I guess, that mentality of like, oh, I need a caretaker. Oh, I've, you know, I can look towards someone for guidance and support. So they left that part in. But as soon as they were old enough to stop breastfeeding, then it just became the group raises these kids.
Huh. Yeah, that's different. It's unique. That seems like more of a process, really, than like some of these other cults. That one, that reminds me similarly to more of like Keith Raniere and Nixium.
Right. Although this one, it's a little bit hard because there are some documentaries on this one, but the documentaries are pretty stark. Most of it is about the kids. There was a lot of incest, I guess, that occurred in this community. But also the kids were sort of trapped in here. Like, they didn't have a say on how they were raised, and that they didn't have like a family unit. So, which led to a lot of neglect and a lot of the records, people just go back and they read like the kids' diaries and stuff. And they just weren't educated. They weren't really, it was such an isolated community that it came with all the downsides of that. And maybe only a couple of the upsides, because they were very focused on this weird eugenic aspect to it. But it was interesting that it kind of lacked this singular charismatic leader to guide the entire thing. I assume that someone was running the show, but they didn't necessarily have a Jim Jones or a Keith Raniere.
Yeah, no, that is fascinating. And in an earlier group like this, that's even more fascinating because you're talking about post Civil War, and you're talking about before people like Aleister Crowley are around, because a lot of the cult stuff that you and I know of and the stuff that we talked about today comes from Aleister Crowley and some of the weirdos he was hanging out with. So anytime you get a group like that that happened before the time of Aleister Crowley, you've got something interesting there. And I'm not particularly surprised by the eugenics thing, because it seems like earlier times, right? I mean, just think of the royal family, right? Like, there's a reason that some of that stuff exists.
Yeah, they're all chasing that perfect blood that lets them do who knows whatever that cult believes. Maybe they can levitate or see through walls or like breed the perfect human. So I get, yeah. So we went through a lot of them, and I guess final tangent too, that's sort of on the castration, but secret society and like the ancient thing is that, and I don't know how true this is, but I have heard that there's supposed to be this link between Egyptians that wore these white lambskin aprons, and then Freemasons wear the white lambskin aprons, and then Marshall Applewhite cuts off his dick. The three might be connected, but hear me out, is that I've heard this is that it's related to almost like a chakra, that you're kind of bypassing your base chakra by just like, in the case of a white lambskin apron, it's a little bit less invasive of an operation than Applewhite took it to, but it represents this like subdued feeling towards your passions or like your base mammalian urges, that you're kind of like covering it up with like a blocker, like, oh, you know, I was about to go and do something. Oh, I got blocked. Oh, that's right. You know, think outside of that. And maybe that was just a more extreme version of that. But I think a lot of these cults, it almost seems that that would be a requirement. Like, are there any, aside from the Manson family, but are any of them just like free sex nonstop? Like even in Nexium, is it just like bang all day, bang all night? Or do you have to be like regimented and strict about it?
I don't know the answer to that question, but what I would say is that with cults, sex is always one of the top priorities, one of the top things, because that kind of plays into the idea of ritual magic. And that's something that's tied specifically to Aleister Crowley. And that's, you know, even today with all the reading I've done and kind of the deep dives I've gone into, from what I understand is the belief, especially with Aleister Crowley, is that the sex is involved, that's involved in cult work, is of a magical purpose, like that's, or even maybe even demonic or the spirit realm, that's what it's tied to. And they believe that if you have sex in a certain way, or if you use sex in a certain way, that it has power attached to it. And that symbolism is involved in a lot of things you even see today with, you know, the quote unquote Illuminati, you know, whether they believe it or not. Like somebody that's really interesting, you may know who this is, but for your viewers, if they're interested in this kind of stuff, is a guy named Jay Dyer. He has a YouTube channel and he's written a couple books, but he's really well-versed in this stuff. And he can go down. Honestly, if you could have him on your podcast, that'd be a great episode, because he is like an encyclopedia for everything related to cults and ritual magic shit. And one of the things he said that I really appreciate that makes a lot of sense is that all of these groups have kind of levels, right? Whether you're talking about Freemasons, you know, Illuminati, quote unquote, or whatever this thing is that there's the people at the bottom who believe something very basic, which is like, and he talks about the industry a lot, like the music industry, movie industry, and that term selling your soul. There's kind of two meanings to it, because there are people who are using that term as meaning to sell out. So I'm giving up the rights to my music so that I can do this thing, or I'm giving up the rights to my likeness so you can have this, or go be in this movie, or get this publishing deal, whatever it is. And then there's people on the other side of the spectrum who fully believe this. They really are like bought in on Satanism. You know, again, I'm not saying that it's real or not, but there are people who believe in that. And then this all ties into these cult groups, because there's some element of it along the way. And a lot of it, especially in a modern cult, is a lot of this goes back to Aleister Crowley and the stuff that Aleister Crowley kind of picked up and brought and believed in, bought into, is again, this new age spiritualism stuff goes all the way back to Egyptian times and has a little mix of Satanism mixed in there too, right? So that's what it's always coming back to, right? The branding thing should make no surprise when we're talking about the Nexium group. It was somebody's initials, right? They probably believed that there was some kind of spiritual meaning or symbology to it. But in the end, really, what is it? It is, they are branding people with their initials because this is power. It's what you do with cattle.
I guess Crowley's the best place to end this on too, because that he's sort of the epitome of drugs, sex, rock and roll, aliens, right? All of that stuff. He was he was doing mescaline before people even really knew about it necessarily outside of the Midwest and the US. He was doing that stuff as part of magical rituals. He was in a few different flavors of masonry and OTO and Thelema, which he started. So yeah, he kind of becomes that epicenter, which makes sense on why all these other cults have this sex magic aspect, because they're kind of based off of what he started and incorporated, maybe outside of the Oneida community, which maybe is kind of interesting for that regard. And just to bring it full circle, because you mentioned Epstein when we were talking Ranieri, that there are some pretty good speculations that Zorro Ranch was a literal branch of what Aleister Crowley was originally doing, but more specifically that Crowley wrote the book Moonchild, right? And in Moonchild, he describes a very specific process in how you can create this kind of homunculus, that you bring them out to the desert, and that you have a woman that's ready to be pregnant. And then if you get it at the right star times, right, like astrologically aligned times, you find a partner. You go into the desert, because the desert is where these disembodied spirits are wandering. So you've got a much higher chance of running into a spirit in the desert than anywhere else. And that this specific ritual, as described in Moonchild, was taken upon by Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard. This is the Babylon working ritual. And that Zorro Ranch is basically a permanent fixture version of that Moonchild ritual, and that all the weird breeding and all the stuff that Epstein was doing, specifically out in the middle of nowhere in his desert Zorro Ranch, was just a industrial version of what Babylon Working was, as a weekend, experiment by Parsons and Hubbard. So I don't know. I think that's beyond fact. And I think the area in which apparently the original Babylon Working ritual was done, and where Zorro Ranch is located, is not so far to make that a impossibility.
I wouldn't be surprised. And for whatever deeper context is there, who knows, right? Did Epstein really believe in that stuff, or was he using it to be connected to other people who did? Was he using it to have some kind of influence over others? Because it's clear that Crowley was very much bought and sold into it, but he also was an agent for the MI6 during World War II, right? In some weird capacity, he was working for the intel agency.
So he would want everyone to believe, that one makes it so hard, because it's he would want you to believe that. So I don't know how much I believe it.
Shit, I don't know either. Yeah. I mean, it's and I think he's a very interesting character, because he's shrouded in so much mystery. There's so many things about him that don't really make any sense, or why he does the things he does. But the fact that all these people are connected to him is not surprising, because to me, it's almost a gigantic, weird cult pyramid scheme, right? It's no surprise that all these people are connected to each other. They all know each other. Right. They're all going to each other's houses. They're all having parties and doing these weird rituals and stuff. Right. There's no surprise why a lot of that stuff bleeds over into Hollywood. So for me, it's more of how much do they really believe in it? How much of it is a social aspect, or the club? OK, so here's an example. Here's how we could tie this together in my mind. Because when I think of the celebrity stuff that people are always talking about, right, and Satanism and Hollywood and all that stuff, Is it real? Do people really believe that? Or is it more like Skull and Bones, right? Is it like Skull and Bones at Yale? It's a fraternity. They do really weird stuff. And why? Because it always comes back to blackmail. There's a really good movie called The Good Shepherd with Matt Damon. And in this movie, it basically talks about how people from the OSS basically started the CIA. But in the very beginning of the movie, spoiler alert, Matt Damon is in Yale and he's getting initiated into Skull and Bones. Well, they have this ritual that everybody has to participate in to be able to get into the club, because it's humiliating. So that's why these things kind of show up. But one of the scenes is him wrestling another man naked in a literal pit of pig shit, while other people are pissing on them, urinating on them. It's all about humiliation. It's just to degrade you and to have blackmail on you, because it's how else can you keep people quiet? How else can you keep people, in the group and not talk about the stuff that you're doing? You have to have blackmail on them. That's why, look at look at P. Diddy, look at Jeffrey Epstein. What were they doing? They were using this blackmail on people for whatever reason, but that's always this element that's tied in with these groups. So it's like, it almost is like a social thing to keep people quiet about the weird stuff they're doing.
There's a book. I thought when you were like, there's a really good movie, I could have sworn you were going to say The Skulls. I was like, okay, fair point. Yeah. Maybe isn't a great movie. It's kind of like a teen drama about Skull and Bones. Good Shepherd probably was a better example of this. One of the specifics on that, there's a book called Fleshing Out Skull and Bones, which I think is the one by Chris Milligan. There's a few that are really good that are out there, but it kind of recounts that one of the other rituals, in addition to Good Shepherd, I actually have to watch that. I haven't heard of that particular ritual.
It's good.
There's a spoiler alert, but that's the kind of spoiler that I needed to hear in order to want to watch the movie.
Okay. Yeah, there you go.
But there's two other ones. One of them that seems credible just because it's been cited in a bunch of different books that I've read on it, whatever that means, is that they have to get into a coffin naked and pleasure themselves amongst all their bonesmen friends while someone records and they recount every sexual encounter they've had, big or small, throughout their life. And I assume along with any other like naughty or bad things they've ever done. And this is pretty much textbook. And I don't even think that the Bavarian Illuminati invented this. Adam Weishaupt, though, that ran the Bavarian Illuminati, he had the exact same mechanism. If you want to join this club, you got to start writing a diary and you got to just write all the bad things you've ever done. It's got to all be true because I'm going to have people watching you and like all this, and then take notes on all your other people. And it just became a blackmail network. And it almost seems that that's the main reason for a lot of these cults to even exist, is just to amass blackmail. That's the real power. So with that said, how much power do you think that these people really have? Like, how much power did Keith Raniere actually have?
Well, I mean, in their group, it's smaller, right? Like, so it's more relative to the people in the group. He had pictures of them naked, right? Like, he had pictures of them doing lewd things, and that was the blackmail. So that's less serious than when you're talking about somebody like P. Diddy, who literally has videos of you getting pounded by a, you know, male sex worker.
Not me.
Right. Of the victims. And that's another reason they waited so long to come out, you know, is when you've got blackmail on you, that's what it's designed to do. It's designed to keep you quiet so that you won't say anything. Epstein's the same thing, you know, I think less about Raniere and I think more about Epstein. Epstein had blackmail on Stephen Hawking. I mean, if he had that kind of dirt on Stephen Hawking, of all people, like, who else did he have dirt on? Like, that's wild, right? Like, and we only know about this now.
And I guess on that same note of like the whole blackmail, it almost seems in some cases, maybe it was a surprise, but in Epstein, it almost seemed like that was part of the ticket to enter. Like, you knew that whatever you were doing on that island, of course you're getting, everyone gets recorded, but it's like everyone has to like stab the body once so that you're all equally, you know, culpable. Yeah, so that's the reason why, you know, that you're going into this is like, this is why it's secure, is because everyone is compromised.
Yes. Yeah. And that's the intent. If everyone's compromised, then you're all on an even playing field, right? Which is why so many things don't get reported, why so many victims can't speak up, because like, okay, well, I've got this horrible thing sitting on top of me. I want to speak out, say something, but if I do, this could potentially ruin my life, you know? And that's the intent. That's the reason it's there.
All right. This is awesome. This is a nice little smattering. It was more than just the top five cults. I think we even got to like 7 or 8 if you were to go back and count them all. And we rated them. So it sounds like Nexium and Heaven's Gate, top 2, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say top. So. Yeah.
Easy. Well, just easy top 5 material. Based on this video alone, they are both got some high ranking in the top 5. Give people another shout out to where they can find your book that you wrote about the stuff that we were just talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're interested, my book is called What's Under the Mask, and you can find it on Amazon. It's in print, hard copy, and it's an ebook if you're interested in that. And also, if you want to get weekly updates, and I talk about different kinds of stuff like this on my podcast, serial killers, con artists, organized crime members, my podcast is called What's Under the Mask. And you can find those episodes anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming back. Another great conversation. And you mentioned Jay Dyer. Actually, I've heard of Jay Dyer. I'm actually doing a live event with him, barring the next 2 to 3 hurricanes don't blow away Summerfield, Florida. But yeah, October 25th to the 26th, I believe he's going to be there headlining, doing some, who knows what, just doing the Jay Dyer thing.
Yo, so that's going to be fun. Him.
That's at Bohemian Grove. If anyone wants to go to that, it'll be live streaming, but also like you can come in person. But I think you go to brogrove.com and it'll have a bunch of those details and stuff. But it's going to have stand-up comedians and a whole bunch of conspiracy theorists and maybe even like a new insurrection crew, J6V2. I think it might be getting planned there. So that's your thing. Show up.
Look, you're going to have to move fast. Conspiracy cards from Paranoid American are here.
Conspiracy cards, flip it, what's the deal? Conspiracy cards with that paranoid seal. Pack it, unwrap the truth in these stacks. Flip one, flip two, get a few of these packs. Flip it up, what's next? Move fake, we flex. Bigfoot in the woods, they lying, that's facts. MK Ultra, no cap. Trap. Roswell crash, what's that? Huh? They hide the truth, where's that? Where's that? Conspiracy cars, flip it, what's the deal? Deal. Conspiracy cars with that paranoid seal. Seal. Pack it, unwrap the truth in these stacks. Stacks. Flip one, flip two, get a few of these packs.
That's right, conspiracy cards from Paranoid American. A set of over 200 cards featuring legendary conspiracy theorists, cult leaders, esoteric secrets, and more. For more details, visit conspiracycards.com today.
Paranoid. Scribble my life away, driven to write the page. Will it enlight your brain? Give you the flight, my plane. Paper, the highs ablaze. Somewhat of an amazing feel when it's real to real. You will engage it. Your favorite, of course, the lord of an arrangement. I gave you the proper results to hit the pavement. If they get emotional hate, maybe your language, your game, how they playing it well without Lakers. Evade them, whatever the cost, they are the shapeshift. Snakes get decapitated, met is the apex. Execution of flame, you out nuclear bomb, distributed at war, rather gruesome for eyes to see. Max them out, then I light my trees. Blow it off in the face, you're despising me for what though? Calculated and rather cutthroat. Paranoid American must be all the blunt smoke for real. Lord, give me a day away, vacate. They wait around to hate whatever they say. Man, it's not in the least bit. We get heavy rotate when the beat hits, so thank us. You're welcome. Fuck the niggas for real, you're welcome. They ain't never had a deal. You're welcome, man, they lacking appeal. You're welcome, yet they doing it still. You're welcome.